Who are you and what do you do?
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 92 for Wednesday, December 11th, 2013. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where myself and my friends come to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining this episode this week on a late start is a complete stranger, Mr. Jeff Peterson. Welcome to the show. How's it going?
Good. Good. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, man. Thank you for filling in. For those of you not in the know, I had a guest lined up this evening, and they were unable to make it. So, true to form, I threw out a little message in the Frog Pants chat room, and as always, some member of the community always comes through, and Jeff was the man to do that. So, I mean, obviously, you're a Frog Pants listener if I found you in the Frog Pants chat room. So, what's your role in the community? How long have you been listening to Frog Pants?
I've been listening to Scott's shows for 3 or 4 years.
Oh, cool.
And I don't know. I got pulled into Film Sack and mm-hmm. then reached out from there to a couple other shows, and then timing, and I've had to pull back and slim down the amount of shows that I've listened to. So
that tends to be a problem, eh?
Yeah, it's always a balancing process.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite right now?
No, I don't really pick favorites.
Right.
It takes a lot for me to declare something a favorite.
Right on. Well, I'm very much looking forward to the show that it will be returning to the Frog Pants Network, and that is Current Geek. That was a favorite of mine. I was sorry to hear that it didn't do very well because of limitations that it had on it when they first started, but it looks like those limitations are now lifted. So I'm anticipating it to be a very cool show.
Yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be... I mean, all bets are off, right? I mean, both Tom and Scott will be off the leashes, as it were. Not that Scott was ever really on one. And I think they'll be able to make the kind of show that they both originally wanted to make without any restrictions. So I'm looking forward to that. A little bit of news off the top of the show here on the Citadel Cafe, and that is next week, December 18th, is our holiday special. If you have been a guest, or if you are a listener and you'd like to be on the show, drop us a line, thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Same thing on Twitter, or hit me up on Twitter at Joel Duggan and just say, hey, I want to be on the show. And we will sort out a way to bring you on to the episode next week. It's same time, same bat time, same bat channel, but we'll be bringing people in for shorter stints. So if you don't think you can stay for the whole hour, that's okay. We can bring you in for 10 or 15 minutes, and we'll just kind of shoot the shit, as always. And that's about it. So I guess the thing we can dive into, which was kind of a prereq for me filling in a guest this week, and that is I saw Frozen last night. Jeff, you told me just pre-show that you've seen it twice. So yep. It's this kind of cool. We don't often have two people on the show that have seen the same thing. And can talk about it at length. So I'm excited. So I'm gonna get your thoughts on it first. What did you think? Like overall. Also try to keep it spoiler free since the movie has only been out for a couple weeks. Excuse me.
All right. So overall, I really liked it. It's definitely a top 10 Disney movie for me.
Cool.
One of the reasons that I've seen it twice is, I mean, I have to see something four times before I can say, okay, this is number X movie for me in my list that I have. So
right on.
I'm hoping to get to see it a couple more times here and be able to determine where it ranks. The soundtrack, not the singing, but the background soundtrack is definitely my favorite out of any Disney movie so far.
I noticed that as well. That's certainly one of the things in my notes. that I have is that, again, the singing I was back and forth on, but the orchestral score was brilliant.
Yeah, and with the singing, I mean, I was surprised to see Kristen Bell hold her own, which was really nice, because when you're up against somebody who can put out the power that Idina Menzel does,
mm-hmm.
you got to have somebody equally as powerful, especially doing a duet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And for anybody that's listening, that's Anna and Elsa, the voices for them. And it was Kristen Bell played Anna. And what was the other actress's name?
Idina Menzel.
Idina Menzel, yeah. She's from Glee, right?
She's been on Glee. She was the original Elphaba in Wicked. And she was the original Maureen in Rent as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. So she's been no stranger to Broadway musicals and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Right. Well, I mean, I figured if you're on Glee, then you probably know what you're doing. Yeah, I really enjoyed the casting for the most part. There was something about it when Elsa had her big solo sort of moment on the mountain. And for me, it was that she sounded a little bit too old. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I've actually have talked to some people that say that towards the end of that piece, it doesn't really fit the tone of the movie or that character as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I felt through all of the singing. In, well, maybe not all, but a good chunk of the singing, while it's very, very good, and like a Broadway musical, it propels the story. There's no useless songs, which is something I really don't like about movies that force songs in when they don't need one, you know? Or it's just a dance number or an animation number where it doesn't really drive the story. All of the songs in Frozen tell a story, communicate emotion. They're monologues or conversations or things that really move the story along, which is great. But the style of the music, which is like a Broadway musical, again, not bad, but when you're setting a movie in, you know, pre-motor car, like Sweden or, you know, kind of a Norse area in Europe, it doesn't really fit. Because that style of music to me says New York. It says, you know, 50s, 60s. It says, you know, that kind of American mentality. But everything visually doesn't match that at all.
Yeah, I can see where that's coming from. And it's kind of like, I kind of think of it as if they were producing a show in Epcot for today, where you would probably have a similar style music-wise if they went with music to play in the Norway Pavilion.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little bit off-putting. Again, it's good. Like, it's well done. It's fun. There's a lot of really funny moments in the songs. It's clever. But it just, for me, it really kind of it didn't fit. So have you purchased the soundtrack?
Yes, I've actually purchased the deluxe version of the soundtrack, which ended up surprising me quite a bit, because not only does it have all the vocals and the soundtrack, it also has cut tracks and it has instrumental versions of the key songs, so you can do your own karaoke with it without having the vocals of the characters there.
Yeah, that's really cool. I noticed that there's obviously a pop song or something that's been released as a single along with the movie, because one of the children in the theaters behind me was singing along to the, like, even if they'd seen the movie once before, it's still not enough. Like, I know that they've listened to this on the radio or at home on their iPod to be singing all the words to the song. As a matter of fact, I think it was the Elsa solo. I think it was the one that you and I are discussing.
Yeah, it was Demi Lovato. Did the pop version of Let It Go.
Okay, that's what it is then. I knew there had to be a pop version, and I don't listen to pop music like at all, so I knew I was missing the boat on something there. Yeah, so I mean, I mean, the music was great. The story overall, I felt, was classic Disney. You know, like you get what you expect from a Disney movie. And it had been a while since I'd seen a movie in theaters. I thought Tangled, but Tangled was the last Disney princess movie I saw. Wreck-It Ralph, I think, was the official last Disney movie that I saw. And I'm not counting Pixar movies. I'm just counting like the Disney Animation Studio stuff. And I enjoyed Wreck-It Ralph quite a bit as well. So I feel like Disney's kind of back on track with putting out some really high quality, you know, animated movies that deliver what you expect from Disney. Do you think that you mentioned that, you know, Frozen is up in your list of movies? Do you think it holds up to movies like Wreck-It Ralph and even the Pixar films?
My top 10 spans Disney animation and Pixar. So it's a combination of both. And I mean, I think Disney actually plussed their usual storytelling with this movie, because they are able to keep the surprise a surprise. And it was just really nice to see those changes that have not been typical Disney.
Yeah, that's something that both Jocelyn and I, my girlfriend and I, went to go see it. I mean, it was a great date movie, by the way. If anybody out there listening wants to take a spouse or a partner or a girlfriend boyfriend to this movie, it's a fun date movie. It's very cute in that way. But I found we found actually the same thing, is that you kind of get the idea of the plot, you kind of know where things are going. There's no giant surprises in terms of the main story points. However, there are some really fun twists on traditional roles, traditional moments of Disney movies, where they just put their own spin on them, a modern spin, we'll say, on them, without ruining any fun surprises in the movie, that really make it stand out. And things that we were really happy about, because Jocelyn, as some people might know, is a big video game person, and you know the way that women are portrayed in video games, and with the way female gamers are portrayed in the industry, a lot of times is a big stereotype. And to see the stereotype of a Disney princess change a little was really nice, we thought. And not just the princess, but the story in general, like the fairy tale had a nice little kind of oomph to it, I thought. What did you think of Olaf the snowman?
Well, so I live in Utah, and
oh, cool.
We have a very heavy child-focused marketing when they do heavy marketing here. So really, the only trailer that ever played for Frozen was the first trailer, which was Olaf and Sven on the ice messing around with the carrot and that. And that had me prepared to absolutely hate Olaf.
Mm.
And I was dreading the entire movie just because I hadn't seen any of the other trailers. But I was very surprised at the way they introduced Olaf and the way that they used him in the movie. And they made very good decisions with that, which was very nice for me. It completely changed my mind and has me wondering, well, what does Disney marketing know that I don't know?
Hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed it as well. I was going in dreading the character, hoping that they weren't going to look at movies from DreamWorks and, say, Sony Animation or Blue Sky that have these comedic sidekick characters, some of which are successful, others are not. And I was hoping that Disney wasn't going to try to do a formula, and they didn't. Olaf is endearing, used just enough, and very, very funny when he is used. And there's a couple of, you know, slapsticky moments, but, you know, it works because Jocelyn and I were in a theater full of children, and they were losing their minds. Whenever his head fell off or his butt was where his hands should be or whatever, like, they thought it was hilarious. You know, not that we didn't, we thought it was funny too, but I mean, it was really hitting a home run with kids under 10.
Yeah, I definitely think that they've managed to they've managed to avoid making him Jar Jar Binks.
Yes. Yeah. Good call. Good call. I'm glad that he wasn't a giant actor either. Like, I'm glad it wasn't Martin Short or, you know, a Robin Williams type or somebody that has this huge personality that would have tried to steal all the scenes. A lot of times you had to listen really carefully to what Olaf was saying to get the joke. And a lot of what he was saying were those fun little kind of adult crafted jokes that, you know, the kids might get a giggle out of, but the parents are the ones kind of rolling their eyes going, oh boy. You know, like they obviously threw a couple of pitches in there for the adults in the room through Olaf. And the reindeer too. The reindeer, yeah. and Kristoff had some fun kind of, you know, the typical, you know, not adult as in R-rated, but the aimed at parents jokes that you often see in these kind of movies.
Well, I've had a friend say that Kristoff and Sven are the Han and Chewie of the movie.
Yeah, they really are. You know, with him doing the voice for the reindeer and the reindeer just kind of grunting and licking stuff and being all over the place. I thought it was a nice running gag, too, with the reindeer trying to eat the carrot, which was Olaf's nose in all the scenes that they were in together. I thought that was a cute kind of twist on things.
Yeah, I mean, if they had done it more the way in the first trailer, I probably would have absolutely hated it. But the way that they've pulled that off, it was exactly what it was supposed to be. It was cute and created a sort of bond between the two characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Especially because what you would expect is that Olaf is afraid of his nose being eaten or is very defensive of his nose being eaten. And he just has no clue the whole movie. He's just got no idea that the ranger even wants to eat the carrot. You know, he's just, whatever, you know, like, you're awful close to me. I'm going to go over here. Like, he's just kind of waddling around and just by happenstance manages to have all these near misses with the reindeer going after his nose. Oh, man. So are you at all a designer or, you know, in the arts in any way? Because I need to get into some of the design of the film.
I do writing.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I've noticed the design, it was very much, they used the exact same assets that they used for Tangled.
I was afraid of that. And I haven't done the research to go back and look at Tangled since I only just saw this last night. But I really felt that it was very cookie cutter on some of the main characters, which is where you would expect their focus to be. But then some of the tertiary characters had wonderful shape variation, and you know, the one of the French leaders had a huge nose and a great big triangle shaped head and a big belly, and then the leader of Weaselton or Weaseltown, which was a fun joke in the movie, he had like big ears, big googly eyes, and, you know, big mustache. Like, they're all very unique looking characters, but I mean, without the costume for Elsa, Once she changes costume in the first act of the movie, if you put a silhouette of Elsa and Anna next to each other, I'd have a really hard time trying to pick out which is which. I mean, once I knew, I probably could, but I mean, for the average viewer, it was, you know, they didn't really have much, you know, unique about them. And I understand that they're supposed to be sisters, but I feel like Disney had an opportunity to maybe not break the princess, you know, doll sort of physique, but at least, build on it, you know, like, I mean, if you haven't seen the trailer, folks, Elsa has, magical powers where she can freeze stuff. She has, you know, snow power. And to me, you know, like as a designer, I would think that Elsa would be a little pointier, you know, maybe a pointy chin or a pointy nose or, you know, have some of the, like, even the bodice of her dress could have more angles and some stuff on it. And while she's very pretty and has some unique things about her with the costume change, it's not dramatic. Like, it just looks like she's in a different costume. It doesn't look like she's a completely different character. And I think they could have done it from the very beginning where she could have been a little bit more angular and still been pretty and still been appealing. Did you find that she was too soft in her looks?
She actually does have slightly more angles than Anna does. The biggest difference, of course, is the design of their hair. Not even just the color, but the way their hair is held throughout mm-hmm. the movie. Elsa's nose is actually a slightly pointier, and Anna's is more, it's actually larger and more rounded.
Right. I guess it's just, it's so subtle that it doesn't really make a difference. You know, it's like, yeah, it's the same between the two male leads too, Kristoff and what's the other guy's name?
Hans.
Hans. Okay. So again, I want to be careful not to do any spoilers here, but you know, Hans and Kristoff, they both have that leading man sort of look. And if you put them next to each other and break down all the little details, yes, they look different. They have, you know, a different kind of handsome going on, but it's not drastic enough. Like it's not, I mean, you look at the different character shapes and the different designs in something like Pixar's Brave, and other Pixar movies like say The Incredibles, and there wasn't enough of a stark difference there for me to have them read easily. You know, like you said, I'm sure that if I took a really close look at Elsa and Anna that I would see the differences, but you know, I found that they were just really, really similar. And not that, I don't want to say that the character designs were boring, because they're still lovely and well beyond whatever I could do. But I did sort of feel like I wanted more as far as the visuals were concerned for them. Like, I mean, you don't want to give Anna huge, you know, manes of red hair, because then, you know, you're talking about Brave, but you know, like I felt like there could have been just a little bit something more. Do you feel like they could have switched up the body types a little bit too?
I would expect Anna to be a little bit more built than Elsa, because she's out running around all the time.
Yeah, she's very physical. She's a very physical character and klutzy.
Yeah. Hans looks like the classic Disney prince, and Kristoff, I mean, it's more what Kristoff is wearing that tells you that he's a worker, basically.
Yeah, and I feel like, I mean, I understand, I know that they he's a little heavier, like he's not, there's no, you know, Calvin Klein six pack underneath the parka, but I feel like they could have gone even heavier with him. Like he still could have been handsome. He still could have had, you know, his big eyes and his nice smile and all that kind of stuff. And he could have been like a little huskier, like a little bit more like Wreck-It Ralph, you know, like I'm not saying, you know, all squared off and stuff, but like he could have been, he could have had a bit more of a belly on him. And I still think it would have been an appealing character and a nice way, you know, to bring something like that in there. He felt soft. So he didn't feel very masculine, which is again, like, I'm not saying that's good or bad, but in the role that he's in, it kind of, I don't know, you kind of needed something. Like, I felt like visually a lot of the characters were like almost there, you know, as far as the acting and the story, they were totally there. Like everything was great. So for you, like as far as the writing was concerned, I thought that was, you know, well done. But with the visuals, something was just coming up, you know, short for me. And it's funny, like I couldn't quite put my hand on it, you know, or my finger on it. Like it was a little bit off-putting, you know? And I mean, maybe I'm just conditioned to with other movies like How to Train Your Dragon and I'm trying to think of some other movies that are extreme. I mean, granted, I know that Kung Fu Panda is using animals, but like, if you look at all the different characters in the main cast of Kung Fu Panda, like they're insanely different shapes. And I mean, really, and the same thing with How to Train Your Dragon. I mean, like you can look at, the girl and then Hiccup and some of the other characters that are the human characters, and they're very, very different. And as far as the way that they look, but all of them have a certain appeal, you know?
Yeah, Despicable Me would be the one that I would point out that has large differences between all the characters. You can see who's who at a glance.
Yeah, that's a good. That's
until
a good
you get to too. The minions, at least.
What? Yeah, that's true. That's true. And arguably, there's a couple of those minions that you can still tell apart too. You know, via their, you know, they've got one eye and a certain personality, or they always have a certain accessory or like, you know, binoculars or something. Yeah, I think that's a really good example. Well, I mean, overall, I thought that Frozen was good. I know that I feel like I'm kind of picking it apart here, but it is a really, really fun film. Like I said, it's a great date movie. You know, the score is fantastic. I'm trying to think. The other thing that I thought was really cool was a lot of the effects and how they thought out and designed and executed all of Elsa's snow powers, which involve like ice crystals and snowflakes and icicles and snow monsters and, like, you know, all kinds of stuff. And I thought that was really inventive and really well done, you know, using, you know, CG and stuff the way that that you can as an animator and as a director to you know, take advantage of that kind of stuff. And I thought that was really well done. Anything else of note that you want to mention about the movie?
So there's actually, I'd say there's 2.5 cameos in the movie. None of these are spoilers.
Cool.
The horse is definitely the exact same horse design that was used for Maximus in Tangled.
Oh, yes.
I think they just gave him a different color palette and used the exact same assets even. But during before the coronation ceremony, you actually see Rapunzel and Eugene walking into the castle.
Oh, really?
That's interesting. They're on the screen for a brief second on the left side, but you can definitely tell that it's them.
Interesting. And Disney likes little Easter eggs in their stuff, don't they?
Yeah, that's actually been confirmed by the animators. Even the Tangled team wasn't aware of that until the movie came out.
That's fun. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're building anew, you know, like with Tangled going through all the turmoil that production went through, and then to push it out into a movie and have it do well, because I liked it, I thought Tangled was great. And then, you know, to have another princess movie, to have, I don't know about tying Wreck-It Ralph into the rest of your properties, but if you're going to do, more fairy tales, if you've got an opportunity here to kind of do some crossover and not in the, you know, Tangled Frozen number 3, you know, sort of sequel sort of situation, but being able to give little nods that it's all sort of happening in the same universe. That's I think fun for some of the Disney nerds out there.
Yeah. This was actually one of, Walt's unrealized projects. The Snow Queen was a movie that he wanted to make, before he died. And it's taken them quite a while to be able to get to where they felt they could do it right.
Yeah, that's really cool. What did you? That reminds me, and I can't believe I didn't mention this at the top of the show. What did you think of the short that they put in front of the movie?
That was fantastic, especially getting to hear Walt's voice as Mickey.
Yeah, I thought that was neat too. At first, only for a brief second, I thought they were actually going to show one of the old Mickey Mouse cartoons, which I would have been okay with. But it wasn't until I started to look at it, it's like, no, this is too clean. This is new somehow. And eventually, of course, they revealed what was going on with the cartoon with Mickey coming in and out of the screen. And I thought it was a lot of fun. And I thought it was nice that they didn't over animate it, if that makes any sense. Like, there was a lot of pose to pose, a lot of very quick, fast, simple movements on Mickey and other people's behalf.
Yeah, it was very much in the style of the original Disney Mickey Mouse shorts.
Yeah, you know, somebody was paying very close attention and probably put a lot of love into that, because it's silly and fun, and, you know, arms stretch into stairs, and cartoons were rubber. You know, it's not so on model all the time. Yeah, now that's something too about the animation in Tangled that I noticed. It was amazing in terms of how realistic the character. How realistically the characters moved, but I didn't find it very cartoony on all of the main characters. The Duke of Weaselton was all over the place. He was very, very, very fun and I don't want to say well animated, but he was animated very differently than most of the cast.
Well, he was physically animated in all of his movements.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, he's all over the place. But I feel like the other guys, I mean, I'm sure they use motion capture to a point. Like, I'm sure that they have to, you know, use it as reference, if nothing else, and then they build on top of that. But in particular, Christoph had some very subtle things where you could kind of feel how big he was and how slow he would move if he was, you know, kind of trudging up to something, that sort of thing. But it almost like when they went to an extreme, I mean, their faces would make an interesting expression, but they wouldn't really go over the top a lot of the time. And I miss that on some of the main characters. I could have gotten just pushed a little bit more. So I don't know. I don't want to come across as an animation snob. But like I said, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I think more with the fairy tales, Disney tends to be more conservative, especially with the human-based characters. They'll go more all out with the sidekicks or whatever animated buddies the characters have.
Yeah, and I, you know, thanks. Just
more conservative with the human-based ones.
Yeah, it's very true. I'm thinking back to, like, you know, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, all those kind of things, and all of those characters move very much like people. They don't go over the top on a lot of stuff. But it might also be just the difference between watching a two-dimensional drawing move across the screen, you know, on 24 frames a second, drawn on paper, you know, versus realistic animation on a CG puppet. And it might be just the simple fact that they can get so much more realism and subtlety into a CG puppet these days than they used to be able to in the 2D animated features, it for no other reason other than the technology that's available. And maybe that's what I'm seeing. Like, maybe I'm feeling the older stuff was punchier because it was physically punchier. Not that it was designed that way, but it just couldn't get smoother. It couldn't get more real because it just would just take too long. And maybe that's what I'm picking up on.
Yeah, they definitely have where you can feed the information into the computer and you don't have a main artist for a character who draws frame one of a scene, and then you have the secondary artists who animate that scene, which tends to give it a different feel. And with the CG animated, you're getting the same feel through every frame of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's really true. Right on. Well, I guess the verdict is, go see Frozen. Don't miss it in theaters. It's a lot of fun. And I think that if you have an opinion on it, by all means, drop us a line at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. And we'll be happy to share that on the show. Jeff, are you an MMO player by any chance?
I used to be. I stopped quite a while ago, though.
Oh, okay. Would you be interested in starting anew in, say, 2014?
Depends on where I am in life at that point.
I don't have much time for them either, I have to confess. I no longer play World of Warcraft, but I did enjoy my time in it. And I have been following, as I've mentioned on the show before, Wildstar, which is the upcoming MMO from Carbine Studios. And this week, they revealed the final class in the MMO, and it has tickled my funny bone and my shotgun bone, which is the engineer. And I am stoked to play this class. So my other pick this week for what I've been watching is the DevSpeak video for the engineer. And essentially what these are dudes. It's like a cross between a paladin and a warlock for anybody out there that plays World of Warcraft. Well, what this means is you have heavy armor, you have a giant cannon, and you have little robots that fight with you. And the line from the trailer was, they kill stuff while you kill stuff. So there's an awful lot of forward momentum to the engineer as the final class revealed for Wildstar. So I'm stoked. I was surprised that I never thought about it sooner. Wildstar has got all these different classes. You know, they've got this guy with a power sword. They've got these guys with claws and gauntlets. You've got, you know, magical mind blades and explosions, and you've got little blaster pistols like you'd think you'd see in a sci-fi MMO, but no one had a great big cannon. And I don't know why I didn't clue in until now that no one had a big frick-off gun. Have you seen any of the stuff from WildStar? Have you been keeping track of it at all?
I'm looking at it right now. Looks interesting. I like the design that they've gone with their characters.
Yeah, it's very cartoony. It's a little, I want to say more realistic than WoW. It's a little bit more extreme than WoW in that a lot of the characters go from like very thin ankles and very thin wrists to big arms and big legs or big hips. Some of the characters like the Makari, which are all robot, have very, very tiny waists because, of course, they have no insides. All they need is just basically a spine and some servos, and that's it. So despite the fact that they're anthropomorphic, they have some very unique proportions. So far, I've been enjoying, you know, exploring the trailers for the game and the designs that they've been releasing every week. So I just wanted to throw it out there as, you know, one last thing. There's going to be a live stream this Saturday for about an hour the engineer class, where they're going to be explaining, showing some of the abilities, and showing off the class in a bunch of different roles in the game. So if you're interested at all, follow team_WildStar on Twitter and get all the news there. I will definitely be tweeting in, maybe not Saturday live, but certainly on demand at some point. The stream's about an hour, so it's pretty easy to consume over over lunch break. Right on. Well, I guess this is a little bit of a short episode this week, but I wanted to at least give a great big thank you and shout out to Jeff, my guest tonight, for filling in for an absent guest. And Jeff, do you have, I mean, you said that you are into writing. Do you have anything that you want to plug? Do you have any, I don't know, like projects or websites or podcasts of your own that you're doing?
No, I don't really have anything right now. I basically have a lot of started projects that don't have a home anywhere and are in no danger of being finished anytime soon.
I do have a few of those myself. Right on. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. As I mentioned, every week we record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on joelduggan.com/live. Music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the podcast is, of course, available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. You can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google Plus with just the show name. Happy to hear from you with your opinions on Frozen, your thoughts on Christmas coming up, what your favorite Christmas specials are, Christmas traditions. Let us know. Give us some fodder for the Christmas episode next week. Don't forget to tune in to The Gamers Inn on Friday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. If you're a gamer, tune in to Jocelyn and Ryan as they break down their opinions on the latest gaming news and what they're playing. Visit gamersinpodcast.com or amove.tv/TGI for details. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan, and you can find everything that I'm up to online at joelduggan.com, including my book, StarCrossed Volume 1, which has a new price. The artist editions are permanently reduced now to $15. So what that does is includes a signature, dedication, and a sketch of your favorite comic character from StarCrossed in the cover of the book. So if you'd like to check that out, you can go to joelduggan.com/store and pick up a copy. You can find me on Twitter, at Joel Duggan, same with Google Plus, and that is it. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.